I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of six darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. Do you understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
This week's Routine Checkup, we're joined by Laurel and Brendan Brady, the brother-sister filmmaking duo and creators of the award-winning comedy drama short film Chronic. Let's talk about it. Guys, I'm so excited for this conversation, not only because we get to talk about something interesting, which is like every fucking week, right? But also we're talking to a couple of pals from back in the day, back in my theater school days.
Hot diggity damn.
Right? I mean, we weren't in the same school, but Laurel and Brendan, who we're chatting with today, they were classmates, schoolmates with my high school sweetheart, Katie McCullough. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Sweet old Caitlin McCullough.
Sweet old Kate.
Sweet old firecracker Kate.
I feel like I have to say now, sweet old, you gotta, Katie McCullough.
I'm sure she loves being called old three times. Yeah.
Old Katie McCullough.
Katie is 87 years old.
I'm telling you right now, she literally looks the same way she did when I asked her out when she was 15. Like, that woman does not age. But they went to school with Katie. And so I got to meet them from, like, you know, traveling up to York University from Ryerson and meeting the same kin that I was going to school with, but just up a little further north at a different university. And fast forward to present day, they're still in the industry, still doing the work, putting together really amazing stuff. And the three of us had the pleasure of spending a few moments of our morning this morning watching their latest comedy drama short film, Chronic, which is going to be on YouTube today or tomorrow. What is the date today as this releases? This is January 31st. It's today. You can go watch it right now on YouTube. Fuck yeah. Look at the timing of that. We're recording this before Christmas.
I was wondering when it actually, like, I was like, is it today?
Yeah,
is it
day?
Today, yeah. When this
today
comes
in
out?
The future?
What is this?
But
I was looking to Laurel and Brendan. I'm like, do they know what day today is?
I was panicking. I was like, do we say what day?
The great thing is that today is any day that people are listening to this podcast.
That's right.
Beautiful.
That's
yeah.
Right. That's right. The beauty of an evergreen conversation. This can, yes. You can be listen to this in 2093,
yep.
And the aliens are running the country, but you can still probably watch it on YouTube. Laurel, you know,
shout out to the person who's listening in 2093 right now.
Yeah,
I just
want to
say,
yeah.
I see you
totally, totally. Yeah,
not,
they're just in
not
a
with
pod.
Your eyes.
They're just in a wet pod.
Oh my god, I knew this conversation was going to be like this. Is off the fucking rails. We're already. We're 2 minutes.
No, but it's important. I want to say to them 1001100.
Yeah, right. This is the language of 2093.
Laurel, Brendan, thank you so much for joining us today. Please, for the guys here and for all the listeners. And for that that hybrid alien human hybrid that's listening, give a little introduction. Let us know who you guys are.
Oh, okay, yeah. So we're a brother sister filmmaking duo in this context.
Not like the Pornhub variety, but like legit. Brother,
yeah, not stepsis,
yes.
Step siblings.
Yeah, 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 definitely not. Just yeah. Really wanting to puke in this exact moment, but no, not that. Yeah, in the most true sibling way, we are just, you know, normal, non Game of Thrones siblings. And yeah, we obviously, like, I have our own careers and stuff like that, but Brendan and I have had the the joy of collaborating multiple times together. And yeah, our latest comedy drama, Chronic, is the latest Irish twins film, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. And are you Irish twins?
Yeah. So Laurel was 3 months premature. I don't know why I'm telling your story, but so I was born in October 1988 and Laurel was born in July 1989 and she was 3 months premature. So we are really, truly Irish twins.
Yeah.
What the fuck is Irish twins?
Irish twins is
Irish twins refers to one mother having two children who are born 12 months or less apart. Oh, wow. Crazy. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
It's a slur against our people, but it's okay.
Right. If you're Irish, then it's fine.
Yeah. Then it's totally fine.
Yeah. So you guys, I guess to get into this, before we kind of unpack Chronic, which congratulations, by the way, it's a delightful little watch.
Thank you.
One thing though, I will say this, one thing I fucking love about short film is that there is, I mean, if it's a good short film, there is all the fat is just trimmed out of it. It is just like every single line, every single moment, every beat is pushing the story forward. And it is so important to like keep that thing so trim. And it just makes for watching short film really fun. I fucking love it. But anyway, aside from that, let's get into what spurred the movie? What was the impetus? What was the inspiration to tell this story of a young woman living with chronic pain and the struggles that ensue from her social life?
Yeah. So I actually had a brain injury and then result like a lot of chronic pain in my neck and back from like whiplash. In 2019 from a work-related accident, which doesn't sound funny. The short is actually has humor in it. So this is a sort of depressing way into the story. But I sort of spent a long time on bed rest, not being able to write or focus or concentrate. And I kind of spent those times of months and months and months in bed just being like, oh my God, this experience is so shitty and so painful. And but also like there was darkly funny elements. And I think that just like as a person, I find I like to laugh at like the horrible things in life. I don't know. Maybe I'm just like a dark person, but it really helps me. And I ended up writing a TV pilot, which was sort of very directly my own experience, a work-related accident. And I showed it to Brendan and he really jived with it because he has his own experiences. I'll let Brendan speak about that. But and he said, he was like, why don't we try to make this into a short film to prove that we can make something about chronic pain and disability that sort of impacts people, but is also funny. Ooh. And Brendan, I don't know if you want to speak about.
Yeah, I think what was interesting too is like watching your sister go through this horrible experience. And I hope I'm not speaking out of turn here, Laurel, but she had just finished a residency at the Canadian Film Center. For those of you not in the film and TV business, it's like the preeminent film school in Canada. And Laurel was one of five writers who had gotten into this program. And it's supposed to be like the moment where you're launching into your career. And literally within months of finishing this, she had this injury and was completely taken out of being able to work for, I think, 6 to 8 months. Wow. Before she could even look at a computer. So as her sibling, when she brought this to me just to read it, I just wanted to also be a part of her journey of like getting back on the horse of getting to get to work again. And the other thing is it's so hard for writers more than, you know, similar to actors, unless you get a whole bunch of people together to actually do your thing, you're kind of writing in a vacuum. You can write these pilots endlessly and never actually get anything produced. So I said, let's do this short film as a way for you to have something to show people at the end of this experience. But also then, you can get back into this business. And I think it was a really fun way for us to kind of get to work together again, because we hadn't been able to since Laurel was at the CFC. Mm. So,
Laurel, did you, like something that when it's like 6 to 8 months and you have this this like, you have this big layoff. You can't be doing the things that you wanted to do. Like Brennan just said, you were kind of like at this point, you're supposed to kind of like launch off, and then all of a sudden you get this detour. Something that I think about and that I see in experiences of like an injury or an illness is like the difference between the acute period of the illness or injury experience Ooh. Versus the chronic one, where like on the front end, it's like, there's a lot of concern and there's a lot of like, I'm here to do this. I'm here to help you with that, which somehow in the chronic experience of an injury or an illness, it's like, you just continue to kind of need that same support, but like,
people get bored,
but people get complacent to it. And it's like, all of a sudden it's like, now it's annoying. And instead of like,
bored was a joke.
Inspiring.
I was joking when I said bored, they get bored.
Yeah. Thank you for clarifying that you didn't mean that, Brian, because I'm pretty sure, you know, we've been meaning to talk to you, Brian.
Yeah, we thought you were
I feel like a lot of the people who listen to the show think you are an awful human being.
Yeah, exactly.
And so if you could just keep clarifying that you're not. That would be
and
great.
Since you and I've been doing this for 20 years, I know that you're an awful human being.
I appreciate you saying that, because I was worried that I was overthinking things, right. because I have the tendency of doing
you're just
that,
purely so. Rotten. Okay. So Laurel, did you feel that was like, was that an experience that you resonate with, like the sort of okay, get over it kind of vibe from some people?
Totally. I think too, it's like that hard thing, because I think it also depends on like what day it is. Cause some days I think I felt a lot of compassion for other folks who just truly didn't know what to say, or they put their foot in their mouth, or, you know, someone makes a joke and you're just having like a soul crushing day. You know what I mean? Yeah. And you kind of like, I had a few moments where people would just make a joke and I would just be like, start crying. And like, obviously they felt terrible. And then sort of again, like 10% of my like, evil side was like,
feel shitty.
You feel shitty. But yeah, I think there is that weird thing where I think it's a lot like grief. There's like a period where people feel that it's justified to talk about it and have empathy. And then there seems to be, whether it's conscious or not, there's sort of a cutoff point where people, maybe they're just like, well, get over it. You know what I mean? Again, I don't think the intention is truly that sort of vicious place, but I do think it's just like, if you have never had an experience of illness or pain or anything like that, I think you just don't have an understanding of how long things can take to heal from, or maybe you're always going to be experiencing this new reality. And I think people don't understand how much of a mind fuck that is to just accept that, and how that's not a linear journey. I don't know if that makes sense, but
no, that totally makes sense. I mean, it's funny that you like you made the comparison to like from the perspective of the people who aren't in it, experiencing it, that it's akin to grief. But then what you were just saying about the experience of being in it is grief. That is grief, right? You're grieving the loss of potentially grieving the loss of the life you once knew. And now 100%. there's this new way of living that in that moment doesn't seem as easy as the way before. It's like, you know, it's like, it's like the way that we've grieved. I feel like we all kind of had experienced like a collective sort of grief soon after COVID started, where it became very evident, like, oh, wow, the world is now never really going to be the way that it was prior to this event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now we have to learn how to like navigate the world with this new lens of seeing the world. And that is for people who have come into some sort of chronic illness or chronic disability, who weren't, you know, like myself, I was born into it. It's all I know, right? So I don't really have a life to have grieved, but there will be moments where I will grieve the time before a certain incident or whatever. But for people who, you know, for like yourself, you're in your, I don't know, like turning 30, turning 31, and then all of a sudden you have like a, you have an injury and your life shifts. That's grief, right? You're experiencing it right then and there.
I like the way, Laurel, that you described it as described the fact that it's not a linear journey, because I think that for a lot of people who haven't directly experienced that, it's easy to look at somebody on one day and see that they're doing, you know, fairly well and going, oh, well, you know, tomorrow they're going to be the same. And then they're not. And like, for some people that doesn't compute, they're like, well, what the fuck? You were out yesterday. So, and they don't realize, I love the, you know, the Spoonies metaphor when they talk about the spoons, like the price you pay for, like, and I think that you captured this well in your film, that the price that you pay for like doing something maybe the day before and how that takes a toll on you the next day. And for a lot of people, that just doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Can I ask, man, if this is too personal, that you just tell me and that's okay. But what was the work injury, the workplace injury that you experienced?
Yeah, of course. No, not at all. It's not too personal. It's one of those things where I've like replayed this incident so many times. And I think going back to like mourning, I had to be like, accidents, like there's a reason it's called an accident, because I look back now and I'm like, why didn't I just move? Or why didn't I look? Whatever, whatever. But I was working a production job and I was unloading these boxes. And then a bunch of people were standing where I was loading the boxes. So I moved over and was just really rushing, going one after the other, box, box, box. And I ended up standing up with like the full force of what happens when you stand up into about 5.5 inches of granite. And I struck like the soft part of the right side of my head. So like the force then like kind of hit my brain against the other side of my brain. So oddly, like my right side definitely hurt, but a lot of my pain was actually on my left side, which was like a very odd sensation. And then I have like, I got whiplash and just like a bunch of really hard stuff in my spine.
Right.
Again, like it could have, I'm like trying to silver line it. I'm like, it could have been a lot worse, but it was fucking painful, as you can imagine.
Okay. Yeah. I've got a question for you, because what you just said brought something up. Mm-hmm. Something that we've actually talked about on the show in the past, which I'll tell you about. But before I do,
I know where you're
chair shopping.
I'm curious when you've obviously had the experience of telling people about this. Did you ever get the response or the feeling that the person you're telling doesn't quite compute the fact that this is something that actually like fucked you up? You know, it's like you hear someone, you say, yeah, so I stood up and I hit my head, and they go, oh yeah, okay. Yeah, and then did you get hit by a car? Yeah. Like, what the fuck? What do you mean? You just stood up. Like, that's it. There's no way that could injure you that way. Brendan's like, oh, well, that was.
totally. And I think like my natural impulse is either to downplay it and be like, ha ha ha, or I'd be like, imagine standing up into 5.5 inches of granite. Like, it is not a forgiving fucking thing. And also, I see granite now, like, you know, when you go to people's houses, and I have this like resentment towards this inanimate object.
And you just immediately have to leave. You're like, I can't do this.
Too much granite.
Too much granite.
Yeah. Well, there was we had a guy on the show. We had a guy on the show earlier this year or last year. That's and he's been through the ringer. The poor fucking guy is like, he really had a really awful traumatic brain injury that led to like, I mean, years, a decade of just cascading issues that all had to do with his cognitive ability and his brain. But the story that he told about how it happened, like I could not resist laughing at just how absurd it is. Right. And it was just simply, he was like, I was at Staples shopping for an ergonomic chair, and the box was like under, you know, like under a big like sort of scaffolding of metal beams, and I just stood up and bonked my head, and the Staples guy was like,
a bad bonk,
whoopsie daisy.
And now he can only sit in sit on exercise balls when he works.
But we've had TBI sort of stories on this podcast where you know, another one where a police officer was texting and walked into a wall. Yeah. And people hear that story and they're like, oh, well, You know, like I've stood up and bonked my head on a cupboard before, hidden away where it hasn't had that outcome. So they like can't really understand how it's possibly that bad.
And I think also like we see professional sports athletes take hits constantly.
Yeah.
Our film and television tells us that if you get hit, it's really not that bad. Like we societally do not value our brains that much when it comes to protecting them.
Yeah. And like, honestly, I feel like I still think physical comedy is so funny, but I watch shows and movies so differently now. Like when people kind of get a concussion and people are like, the next scene they have just like a cute Band-Aid and they're like, oh, you know, they have like a slight ringing. I just want to be like, go fuck yourself. That's not what it's like.
This is not how this is represented.
Yeah, it's funny. Like when you think about like spy movies and shit, or like, you know, like the good spy who's like, oh, I don't kill people, but I knock them unconscious. It's like, oh yeah, you're just, but they don't just wake up and like go, oh no, what happened? They wake up and they go, oh no, I can't, like, oh my God, I can't.
Turn down the lights, fuck the lights.
Like, and I can't think, and the rest of my life is fucked, basically.
Yeah.
So you might as well have just killed them. Like, be the good guy and put the bullet in the back of the head. Like, come on, geez. Bond. Like, what's Bond doing? Just Bond is just out there just dishing out disability left, right, and center for the
Batman,
sake of
Batman. Yeah. Is like, I never kill. I just
I just completely destroy their livelihood that they have to live in that experience for the next 50 years.
I'm curious, Laurel,
that would make a good short
because I imagine. So
the
I imagine if I was
the brain injury
in your situation and that happened to me, my initial thought would be, I wouldn't think that like, oh, this means now I'm now going to have a traumatic brain injury and I wouldn't know what's about to come. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, like after you hit your head and started to realize that things weren't okay, what did that experience look like?
Oh yeah. Well, again, I think, you know, how just like some people process things with humor, and again, I don't think it was funny in the moment, but looking back, it's sort of ridiculous.
Yeah.
I remember just hitting my head and being like, oh no, that was a really bad thing. And then my initial response was just like, okay, I'm just gonna keep working. And so for 2 minutes I tried to push the dolly and was like very disoriented, and then I saw my boss and I was like, oh, ha ha ha, I hit my head. And she's like, oh, like, are you okay? And then I just started crying and she was like, what? And I was like, I think I really hit my head. And I remember sitting with an ice pack while my boss was like just telling people we were going to the hospital, and this really nice man and his dog came and he's like, are you okay? And I was really dazed and I was like, I hit my head really badly. And he's like, did someone leave you alone? And I was like, no, they're coming back. And he's like, can I take you to the hospital? And I was like, I don't think so. And he's like, I'm a doctor. And he was very nice. And I tried to give him my health card. And he's like, no, you need to keep that for yourself.
He's like, I'm not an administrator. I can't do anything with this.
And in fact, I'm literally just walking my dog right now.
I'm walking my dog. Yeah.
And then he just disappeared.
yeah, who knows if this was real or like something that was happening.
Yeah.
But I got taken to the hospital. They checked me out. They were like, this is the percentage that you have a brain bleed. And they also asked me, which I had like a very low percentage of a brain bleed. And they also were like, did you see any fluid or anything else coming out of your ears? And I couldn't understand what they were asking. I was like, what do you mean something else? And basically they were like, well, brain matter. And I was like, what does that look like? Whoa. Like, no, whoa. I don't think so.
That can happen?
I've never even
brain matter. But like,
that's why you're not supposed to hold your sneezes in, because it blows your brains out of your fucking ears.
That's right.
Holy
shit.
Right. Yeah, I didn't know
that's the true. That's the true thing. But anyway, I ended up kind of like obviously taking the day off, and I assumed I was gonna go back to work the next day because they were like, probably in a week or two you'll be better. Ooh. I woke up the next day, I was like, had slept for a very long time, which I think is very common after brain injuries. And why I knew I wasn't okay is I woke up and I looked at a chair across the room and the chair was like moving. And no one was home. And I was like, this, like, either there's a ghost in my house, which is alarming in its own right, or or something's deeply wrong. And so I went to the hospital again, and they were like, okay, I think this is like a little bit worse than we initially assumed. Mm-hmm. And kind of did the 2 weeks of like bed rest. And I slept, I honestly slept nonstop. Like I just sat in a dark, well, I laid down in a dark room and just slept. And then I tried to go back to work after the 2 weeks, which is what they recommend. And I was in a show, and very quickly it was clear, like I couldn't turn my neck, first of all. Like I could barely just like move it. And I was in so much pain, and I was nauseous and all the things that come with a head injury. Like I just couldn't think. And so I went to my doctor after a few days, and I was like, you know, the brain clinic told me to go back to work, and I can't think. I'm just like needing to sleep, and I'm all these symptoms. And she's like, okay, no, you can't go back to work. And yeah, that was like a process of just going to doctors after doctors for a number of months and just being put on bed rest. And
Brendan, where on the scale of like ultra compassionate to the main character in Chronic's friends, did you sit in this experience?
Basically, like, were you a Brian and like compassionate, or like a Taylor and go, get the fuck up? Come on.
I would say it would fluctuate, but just quickly, Laurel actually did pitch an idea of the first days after as the first short idea. And I said, nobody wants to watch a girl sleep for 10 minutes. There's nothing there.
You're just in bed. There's a lid for every pot. And I bet you that would be a hit in some. Websites.
I think on those niche, those documentary websites we were talking about with the siblings.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
I hate this.
Documentary websites.
I think it was a back and forth. But if the thing was that when Laurel I first heard about it, I was obviously like, oh fuck, that sucks. That's awful. But assumed, like most people, and again, because nothing in my life had ever indicated that this could be truly that terrible, that it was like, okay, she'll be better in a week. And, you know, I think our mom was very much present with Laurel in those early days of helping her out. And she would call me and be like, Laurel is not doing well. And I'd be like, okay, well, she just got to sleep. It'll be fine. So I kind of vacillated between you guys, where I'd be like, I'd be nice about it. And then 2 weeks would go by and I'd be like, okay, come on, Laurel, it's time to like, you're completely, this is fine. But then getting to visit her and actually see how little she could do. And the fact is, Laurel is a very, very dedicated writer and person who doesn't love to sit down and do nothing. And seeing her be like, she's a workaholic is what I'm getting at, which is another issue we can get into. It all stems from our parents.
Of course. But, mom and dad.
Finally.
I feel you on that.
Don't we all? But the fact that she couldn't work and the fact that she was like, I cannot look at a computer was when I realized that this is not... this is not an easy situation for her. So, yeah.
Hi, I'm Jessie Cruikshank.
Jessie Cruikshank.
I host the number one comedy podcast called Phone a Friend.
Girl, let's phone a friend.
Not only do I break down the biggest stories in pop culture with guests like Dan Levy and members of NSYNC, I do it with my own personal boy band singing jingles throughout. Because it's my show.
It's your show, girl.
New episodes of Phone a Friend.
Yeah.
Drop Thursdays wherever you get your podcasts.
So work it, girl. Yeah, work it.
Okay, that's enough.
One thing that, and I'll throw this out to both of you because, so I guess for context, we should say, so Laurel, you wrote and produced Chronic.
Yes.
And Brendan, you directed it, correct?
Yeah, correct. Okay.
And co-produced.
Perfect. So one thing that I've been, I just recently went to this really incredible conference in Vancouver, and it was put on by Children's Healthcare Canada. And the main theme of the conference, the main reason they were bringing people together, it was mostly researchers and clinicians, but also patients and their parents. And it, the primary theme for the conference was about transitioning from pediatric clinics to adult clinics, for anyone who is just completely unaware, which is like probably most people, and that's not to like throw shade. It just is. That's a really, for a lot of people, a really traumatic and really challenging experience. And the way that I would typically try to like relate that so that someone who hasn't had that experience could like maybe comprehend. It's, you know, for a lot of people, one of the most challenging things that they have done in their life, for like young adults, a lot of people will point to the transition of leaving their hometown after high school, moving to a new city and going to a university. And for a lot of people, that is a traumatic experience. It brings on a host full of mental health issues. And it's really a like high stress sort of time in life. So anyway, the whole conference was about transitions, but so I didn't really need to say any of that because what I'm about to say has nothing to do with transitioning, but just for context. So they had a bunch of breakout sessions, and one of the breakout sessions that I went to, I found to be really, really fascinating. And it was about specifically the importance of seeing the importance of narratives when it comes to experiencing illness. So basically like how valuable and important it is and can be for a patient to see themselves represented in media. Yes. And this is something that for years, like I've heard people talk about this, whether it be from the perspective of like race or body type or gender. And as a cis white male, you know, it's like I'm fucking very well represented, you know, like I have no issues not seeing myself represented in media.
Some would say overrepresented.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. But the one thing that I didn't even realize was that I never actually saw the part of me represented that had to do with my illness, which is a huge part of me. Mm-hmm. But I never even knew that until we went to go see Justin Baldoni's 5 Feet Apart, which was like a hit, teen fiction romance drama about two young adults living with CF and fall in love in a hospital.
Probably was a banger novella.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think it was a book, wasn't it? It was anyway.
It feels like one of those like ones that they're like 95 pages long and bigger print.
Just you crush know? It. Yeah.
Novellas.
Yeah.
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 So
that's what I said.
When we went to go see the movie, the three of us actually we had the opportunity to go see it screened, the premiere screened in LA because we just happened to be there.
Nice.
And in the midst of the movie, I just started weeping. And not because it was a touching scene or something like that. I was just bawling because it was like, oh fuck. Oh my God. I get it. I get it now. I get this thing that I never really truly understood, which was like a need or a desire to see yourself represented in some sort of narrative on film. Mm. And when I was at this conference, they were talking about this exact thing. And one of the things the thing that came out of it, and I'm going to butcher this because I'm not a researcher, but there was a whole team of researchers that looked into this exact thing. And basically what they came to was like, when patients see themselves represented in media, it offers up this sense of empowerment to the patient. I mean, this is just one of several things. And an empowered patient equals better health outcomes for said patient, which I thought to be like really, really fascinating. And I would, it would be really interesting to like kind of dive into that research and have someone on to talk about like, what does that actually mean? And what are the outcomes? And like, how does that all work? So anyway, all that to say, my question to the two of you is like, did you guys put much thought into that or like, what were your thoughts around that or discussions around like the importance of making this film, to accurately represent the experience of someone living with chronic pain in order to provide this like window for people who've been through what you've been through, Laurel, to see themselves and relate to this thing that they're seeing on film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was very important. Brendan and I talked about this actually extensively because it's something that we both, like, not to speak for Brendan, but I think we both feel very passionate about representation across the board, but especially in this area. I think there are certainly chronic pain, chronic illness, chronic disability stories, but they're few and far between, at least to my knowledge.
Sure.
And
yeah.
Sometimes I think, again, not to downplay what other people are doing, because there's some amazing stories out there. We saw a need for humor and levity to be incorporated into these types of stories, because frankly, anyone I know who deals with this type of thing, they usually use humor to like cope, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some people think maybe that's like defense mechanism, and I'm sure part of it is, but also it's just a part of life. Like, I think regardless of what your experience is, humor is there to like make life worth living.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in terms of like the larger project, it's something where we want every episode to focus on a different person's lived experience in terms of chronic pain and chronic illness. And you kind of get a tease of that at the end of the short. There's a support group. Mm-hmm. not to ruin the film, but there is there is like a group of people that Frankie meets who she feels seen and heard by. And I think obviously because a short, as we talked about, is sort of one idea, we had to focus on like one specific story for the actual short film version. But I think our desire came from multiple places. To obviously, like, I wanted to probably process some therapeutic emotions, but also I wanted to share the idea that we can be lead characters of our own stories, even if the story feels niche to a lot of people or it's not their lived experience. Isn't that the beauty of storytelling, that we're seeing examples of life that either not everyone experiences or that we've never seen on screen before? I think that's kind of a really beautiful invitation.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think we spoke about this off mic before, but, you know, as people in the film and television business, you get to a point where, you know, so early it's about just trying to do anything. And then the more I continue on this journey of being a director and helping to produce projects, I want to be actually providing something to folks in the form of connection.
Yeah.
And I think that was really the impetus for me to come on board to this project, was like, I want to help tell this story because it's important to Laurel and because it is important for other people to see this type of experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's like I felt like the short did a really great job of both representing the experience of somebody who's like dealing with a chronic condition. But then also I think did a really good job of like holding up the mirror to the people who haven't.
Yeah.
Like in the way of like the reactions and like the questions from the friend, from the friend group, they reminded me of like they were like Michael Scott, like so over the top, clueless and unaware of like the things that you're saying, that it's flabbergasting. and I feel like that, and again, it's like there's humor in that, and it's like it's so wild that it is like, I think will allow people to kind of see how there are shades of those reactions to somebody else's experience within them, like when they deal with people who have had a chronic injury or a chronic illness or something like that, like the way in which, like, kind of going back to something that we talked about at the beginning of the conversation, was like when it first happens, there's this acute period where you're like overly helpful and overly understanding, because I think people do a pretty good job generally of going, there's you and then there's this thing. And then over time, those two things start to like become one and people see like, oh, you can't come out. Oh, that's you and not, but really it's like, it's kind of, it's the thing that you're dealing with that's influencing you. And so that gets intertwined so tightly that people start to see it as like an affront because it's the thing that they're doing. Anyway, I'm kind of digressing here, but I thought you did a really good job of representing the person dealing with the thing, but also holding the mirror up to the people who haven't.
And I'm glad you brought that up because that was one thing that I did want to like kind of mention and talk about, which was, you know, for people who watch the short, which again, you can watch it. You could pause it and watch it right now. It'll only take about 10 minutes of your time, and the link is in the show notes of this episode. But there's an absurdity to the friend group. With like the, and you know, not to like spoil or anything, but like the 24th birthday kind of thing. Like that's so absurd. And so, you know, someone who hasn't been chronically ill or has never really experienced that side of things, someone might watch that and go, oh, haha, that's just absurd. But I'll tell you right now, like after 10 years of doing this podcast, almost a decade of doing this podcast, I cannot tell you the amount of times where we've heard stories from people who have expressed the fact that they ended up with some sort of diagnosis, they ended up with some sort of chronic illness or some sort of chronic disability, and pretty soon after that experience, all of these people that at one point in time seemed to be very important to them just faded away into the background. And I remember the first time hearing that over and over again, I just thought to myself, there's no fucking way. Like, is that a thing? Like, who's out there doing that? But it is so common. And when I heard that and I said, is that a thing? In my mind, I went, that's fucking absurd.
Yeah.
And it's just as absurd as the hilarious fucking take on the 24th birthday. It's like that, as absurd as it is, it's really real for a lot of people.
It's funny too, because Laurel and I, like, you know, people watch the short and come back to this because I think this is a moment in somebody's life, and there's so many lived experiences. So this is just an experience. But for me, and to that point that you were just mentioning about it being absurd, I did that to a friend. My friend broke her back when she was 20 years old, and I never went to the hospital. Mm. I never visited her. We just kept partying, kept living our lives, doing our thing. And she was out of our lives for a year and a half as she recovered. And then when we came back to like into our lives, it was years before I even addressed that and apologized for my behavior. And I never even thought about the connection because I think my input on the script at this point was to tell Laurel, I was like, I think this is really about the friendships that they're going to lose here. To me, that was the moment because it's like she's going to change. Her life is going to change. And all of her friends are not. They're not having the same experience. You know, they're going to continue on in their lives. And that's what hurts so bad for so many people. At least that's what I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, I think to touch on Brendan's point, it's like, I think a couple of things. I wanted to touch on the fact that like in life, sometimes we fail each other. And that's not because it's like someone's necessarily a bad person. I think it's a deeply human thing that we don't know how to show up for people at some points in our life. And obviously that's why empathy is so important. And I think as we grow up and get older and experience more life, I've certainly thought about times where I've like not shown up properly for people or people who haven't shown up properly for me. And I can look at it now, I think, with a lot more empathy. But I think it's funny because the filmmaking process is such an interesting thing. We had a version of the script where we softened the friends a little bit more. And in the edit, something about it wasn't working. Like it didn't ring true. Like those scenes just didn't fit into the film. And so we had what we ended up with a very extreme version of like her friends responding to her, which I don't actually mind because I think it's like, if you think of it, since it is a lot from Frankie's POV, it's like her headspace, like she's in such a vulnerable position that I think, yes, the friends did respond this way, but it's also like mirroring that crushing sense of pain when someone fails us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the other consideration is, yeah, these people have never, I really think that none of these friends have ever had anything worse than maybe a breakup in their lives.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And so if it was a breakup, I think they would be very like supportive. They'd be, you know, buying their shots.
I get it.
Not that person. But they're like, we don't get it. We I think there's a, again, this is a lived experience thing. There's a time in people's lives where the idea, the consideration that a body and brain can change potentially forever and be impacted, and that capacity can change even on a daily basis, as we're talking about, is unfathomable to people. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't get that, right?
It's really interesting because, like, we oftentimes hear, I mean, and so Jer will ask most of our guests at the end of a conversation, guests who are sick, what is the biggest thing that your illness has taken away from you, and what has it given you? And most of the time when we ask what has it given you, people will say perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's so common that that is the answer that I sometimes take it for granted myself in hearing that. But I think what you're talking about too is that perspective of like, oh, I've been here. I understand now that situation that other person is dealing with. And now I can actually properly empathize with them in a way that if I didn't experience this illness myself, I might not actually be able to connect with them or understand or feel compassionate in that situation.
100%.
I had this experience years and years ago, Bri, when we were working at the Trade Center. Actually, who cares who I was working with. I was working at the
job.
At the Trade
Good
Center.
Good job, self-editing. I like that.
I was, thank you.
That way I don't have to go back and cut it out.
That's right. I was working at the Trade Center doing catering, and we were in the break room, and I worked with this woman who was from Iraq, and she had been living in Canada for like maybe 15 years or something like that. But she was in her 40s. So she had spent the majority of her life in Iraq and was there through like 2001, 2002, like the American occupation of Iraq. And I remember having this conversation we were just having, and we're talking about how I was talking about how experience is relative, mm-hmm. and how, you know, a third party viewer could, I said something to the effect of like, you know, to a kid who gets their Xbox taken away.
Which is basically you at that time, as an 18-year-old.
Well, maybe like 5 or 6 years prior to that. It's like to that kid, relative to their experience, that might be the worst thing. Mm-hmm. Like that's them going, life is fucking over. Like I just got my Xbox taken away, you know, and because for that kid in this, you know, made up scenario, everything has been, you know, daisies and sunflowers for this kid. So relative to their experience, this is like the worst thing that's ever happened. And I was like, and I was basically saying, it's crazy how relativism can be so wild, like how that can be the worst experience for somebody. And she got really mad at me because she was like, well, I lived through this. And like, I've been near bombs that went off. And I was like, kind of like, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I was going, exactly. It's like, that is objectively, from like my perspective as a third party on this, that is horrific. That is a horrific human experience. Nobody should ever go through that. And it's crazy how to a kid who loses their Xbox, who has never been through anything hard in their entire life, how those two things can be comparable to that kid.
Yeah. It feels the same.
Totally. Even though it's like, you know, from an objective perspective, it's obviously not. But to that person,
do you think
it can
that
feel
that
way.
True, though, in the sense that, like, because then we're assuming that there's no that I understand what you're saying in terms of relative. Obviously,
I'm making the assumption, but do you think it's possible
that that is not true in the sense that, like, maybe that person has a capacity that hasn't been unlocked yet to like feel something in an even
exactly, but they don't know that yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Right, but whether or not they know, does it feel the same? Does it feel the same? Do we know that
they
for
don't
sure?
know? Do you see what I'm saying? Until they unlock it, they don't know.
It's like you have to think about like worldview, right? It really doesn't matter.
What did you say? What did you say your therapist said?
That's right.
This and this.
Yeah. Yeah, it can be both.
And so in your film, it's like, you know, That's all coming up for me from the perspective of the friend group of going, we haven't been there. We haven't been there yet. Like, we can't put ourselves. It's very hard for them.
Yeah.
Nigh on impossible for this, like, 23 going on 24 group of young girls to step into the shoes of their friend who's had this experience, because relative to their experience, it's like the breakup in their world is probably the hardest, biggest thing that they've gone through. And I just find that that's just a fascinating, like, human experience thing.
I want to come back to something that you were saying earlier, Laurel, about using humor as a sort of coping mechanism. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because I haven't really thought about this until you brought up that point, that there are a lot of people who go through really challenging times use humor to sort of cope with the experience that they're dealing with. And I would say, you know, proportionately to the amount of people who are sick that we've spoken to who use that, that it there's not a one-to-one representation of that humor in that illness experience in media. It just, like, it's almost like it never exists there in that sense, even though in reality it's such a common experience for someone who is sick. And I'm curious what your thoughts are about that. And I'm also curious about if you have any examples of how you sort of identified humor in your experience in dealing with your brain injury.
Yeah, I think, oh my gosh, it's such a good question. I think there's such a place for humor, whether it's like in media or just in life. Like, I think the fact that we can laugh, it's like, again, I don't know the science behind it, but I'm pretty sure it's like a stress reliever. Like, you literally release stress relieving hormones, I'm pretty sure, when you laugh. And so it's like this gift that we have to have the pressure relief or pressure release valve kind of thing just available to us. And also, I think in the darkest moments, I certainly find that I could be having the worst day of my life and just sort of zoom out and look at it and be like, this is so ridiculous and funny at the same time.
Like,
I remember I started going on walks after my injury. I don't know when it was, like 8 weeks out. And I could kind of do like 5 minutes and I'd like go home and sleep for 8 hours. But one day I made it, like I finally made it to like 15 minutes. And I was like, what a beautiful day. What a beautiful day. And then I stepped in dog poop. I was like, that's fucking funny. Yeah. I don't know. There's just something good about that. But yeah, I think this is like kind of a tangent, but related. One of your guests, Andrew Henderson, was one of my best friends.
Mm-hmm. No shit.
Yeah.
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 You never said, you never told us that. That's amazing.
I knew this, but I didn't even think to make the connection there.
Yeah. Oh my God.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, like, and it's funny because I was listening to the episode the other day with Andrew, which was such a joy. Like, thank you. What a gift for everyone, but especially like all the people who like knew him and loved him, like that episode. But I think, honestly, for me, that was like a huge moment, I think, for all of my friend group, of switching the thinking of being like, sort of horrible things can happen in life. And it's not to say that some days you're not like raging against that. It's not to say that some days you don't want things to be different or you're just angry about all these things. But you can also have humor, and that can be the darkest, like, you know, uncomfortable humor, or it can just be like laughing at the absurdity of this strange existence. Like, why are we here, really, on the deepest level? I feel like, as a person, I'm constantly asking myself.
I was talking to my therapist about this last week. She said in the middle of our session, I was talking about something really challenging for me, and she said, do you notice that you smile and laugh often when you're talking about something really difficult? And I was like, whoa, fuck.
I've noticed that. You're doing it right now.
I'm like, that's really interesting. And she's like, I just read a study actually about, she was telling me that she had read about how this is an experience that people who either really care about what other people think or are empathetic are trying to bring comfort in a situation that they know is hard. And so they're like worried about everybody else. So they're like like, okay, like, I understand that this is really hard about me. Crazy, right? like, because you're trying to make somebody feel more comfortable in a situation. Mm-hmm. And I told her about this experience that I had, that this finally made sense when she had said this to me, was this experience when I was 16 and my friend was hit by a car and died. Mm-hmm. And when I was told the news, I laughed. At first I had thought to myself, like, I laughed because I was in disbelief and I didn't believe it. But I remember feeling really guilty after doing that, because I was like, why did I laugh? That's gross. Like, that doesn't make any sense. But I think the feeling was this, like, involuntary, like, I'm so overwhelmed with this bad news that the only thing I know how to do is try to like stimulate some sort of sense of like relief or calmness. And laughter is something that I think counteracts this like really intense feeling that I'm feeling, which was really interesting to me, because I think in a sense that almost made me feel like laughter was an antidote.
Yeah.
That it could make me feel better and also can make other people feel better through sharing that.
It's so funny you guys bring this up too. And I'm just thinking about the fact that you have this podcast where you three friends joke and discuss all this. So, like, to the point you were making before about the representation not being one-to-one in the media, I think your show is a prime example of like trying to shift that away. And I think we're trying to do it with our show, and hopefully we'll get the opportunity to do it on a bigger scale. Because I think ultimately, like, your point about your friend and you laughing and you saying, oh, I don't think I'm supposed to do that, is like, no, it's all valid.
Yeah.
These are all valid experiences. Yeah. We're not there's not one form of emotion that we're supposed to have in any of these experiences. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think we get tired of seeing in movies, or at least what we'd like to see more variety of, is the types of experiences we can have in sickness, in what it means to live with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. Yeah. If that scene where I laughed and that was a movie, I feel like that would be edited out. They would be looking at that and they'd be like, oh no, but that person doesn't feel like that. And that they're not going to laugh there. That's weird. It looks like they're breaking character. Like, that they should be sad. They should be crying. This emotion doesn't make sense for this.
But, or it's like a scene from like the past, and which gives context as to why they turned out to be the Green Goblin or something.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. They deserve that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that makes a lot of sense though, because it's like you're also in shock. I mean, just to empathize again, maybe this is my own like trying to make people feel comfortable situation, but it's like at funerals and things like that, I totally laughed my head off. Like, I don't know. I think it's also like the shock. It's like your body, I don't know. I also don't really love like crying in front of people. Not that I can honestly choose it, because I am like kind of a big crier, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah,
like,
say it. I feel you.
Okay, great. Love it. But like sometimes I get like mad. I'm like, I don't want to cry here. I don't know why. Probably. I mean, I'll go to therapy after this to figure this out. But but like, it's something about just needing to have a response. And it's also like, it's absurd, I think, to touch on like death for a second, which, yeah, I'm just like making this episode heavy, but I like it. I like going there.
We do
it's
too.
Like, it's absurd that one day people are here and the next second they're not there. Mm-hmm. Like, that's an absurd thing. And the same with, you know, all the things about life, like why someone has an accident, why someone's born and having to deal with the beauty of the challenges and the hard part of a challenge, like the challenges. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but like, you understand what I'm saying? Like, why we have to experience this pain and this hilarity in life. It's just, I think as a human being, I'm constantly being like, why? Mm-hmm. Why? Not in a bad way, just like curious. I'm just genuinely curious. Mm-hmm.
To the absurd point about like someone being here at one point and then not, you know, the next day. I oftentimes think about moments where I'm like getting out of my car and go to close the door and turn around and maybe almost trip and fall down. And I think about in that moment, like, what if that's how I died? Like, what if I tripped and fell and got run over? Like, wouldn't that be, I imagine that like, there's this like moment in this like world after death where you get to look back on how you died and you're like, oh fuck, that was, man, I died in a really dumb way. That's so sad. I'm just going to be so embarrassed when my friends get here and they find out
kinda
that it like happened like that. Like, fuck.
Kind of like the way that like you get to like get a brain injury and like yeah. look back on it and go like, oh man.
Oh, I'm so embarrassed that that's how it works.
I wrote a one act play that got produced at Acadia University. It was about a guy who he gets to the pearly gates and Saint Peter is like, yo, welcome to heaven. Before you go in, we just got to review your life. And so he puts in a VHS tape and they review his life and they get up to the moment where he dies, and he died by sucking his own dick. He got stuck, choked, asphyxiated, and died, and that's why he wasn't allowed into heaven because he was like, but that's not a sin, and he was like, no, it's not, but like they kept this out of the Bible, but like all the apostles were really great at sucking their own dicks, and Jesus couldn't, and so he was just like, anyone who sucks their own dick down there, not coming in here, not allowed to the party.
So if you guys are looking for your next big idea,
yeah, I got lots of them.
That is what we call IP.
Guys, this has been an absolute delight, and as was watching Chronic, which congratulations, I should have said this at the top, but Chronic was the winner of Best Film at the Great Canadian Comedy Festival, and it was also the official selection of Lost Comedy Film Festival, Portland Comedy Film Festival, which also was a finalist for Best Dark Comedy, the LA Comedy Festival, the Austin Comedy Festival, also a finalist for Best Dark Comedy, and BAFTA qualifying Superfest Disability Film Festival. It seems like this thing just has legs, still walking. It is on YouTube now. You can watch it right now. You can find the link in the show notes of this episode. Guys, love, love, love the fact that we got to talk about your work, but also love the fact that we got, you know, an hour to just catch up, and it's so nice to see your beautiful faces, and keep doing the work that you're doing, because this, like we said, this kind of representation is extraordinarily important, and
thank you.
And this has been just a real treat, so thank you guys so much.
Yeah, thank you guys,
it's so fun.
That is it for this week's edition of Routine Checkup. Thank you so much for tuning in, folks. It means the world to us. And if you'd like to continue listening to the podcast, you can do that right here on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And of course, if you want to support the podcast further, you can leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts, or you can simply rate the podcast on your Spotify mobile app. And even better than that, why don't you tell someone that you know, tell someone that you love, tell someone that you don't know that you listen to Sick Boy Podcast and recommend it to them, because we always love those extra ears. The podcast is produced and hosted by myself, Jeremy Saunders, Brian Stever, and Taylor McGilvery. The podcast is managed by Jeffrey Lonis at Talent Bureau. The theme music for today's episode comes from Rich O'Coin. Thanks again, folks. Hope you enjoyed it, and we'll be back next week. That's it for now. My name is Jeremy, and this is Sick Boy.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.